Hey everybody, this is a live Facebook interview that I did with Lil Chris, and I try to always make these up into podcast forms and release them in case that you do not have a Facebook or you did not catch it. Knowing that this is going to be a live broadcast from Facebook that I just created in audio form of. So as you will see, Raleigh Williams actually joined us about halfway through for a little while and chatted, and it's pretty informal and it's not a super in-depth interview or anything like that, but it was a fun one to do, and we had a lot of fun on Facebook for it, and I figured you might want to hear it as well. So without further ado, here is the interview. So everybody here, we are going to be doing a fun live interview with Lil Chris. So Lil Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm living the dream.
Aren't we all?
Especially these days, right? So
right.
For anybody who may not know you or have been exposed to your great work, give us a small rundown on who you are.
Well, being 39 years old, I started playing pool when I was 17, and I'm pretty much a pool player, but I'm also a software developer. That's what I did by trade, and it was only back in 2019 that I decided to start a YouTube channel where I would do some pool lessons. At least with what I know as far as the game is concerned, having played the game for over 20 years. You know, I'm not a professional or anything like that, but I feel that I at least have knowledge that I can pass on to others. And from what I've been told, I give instructions in such a way to where the lowest common denominator can actually pick it up. And if I can hit that low target, then everybody above that target obviously should be able to pick it up as well. So I hopefully, you know, send a message to a wide audience and not just hit mid-level or anything above mid-level.
Yeah, and you create a lot of YouTube content. So that is basically what I'm coming on to talk to you today about, because, I mean, your YouTube stuff is, I mean, first off, you have 54,000 followers. Is that right? Am I cutting you short there?
It's not going to be exact, but I think, yeah, the exact number right now, if I just refresh, is 54,872.
That's crazy. That's a lot of YouTube followers. And
tell me about it. I never would have thought about it, you know, a year and a half ago when I started.
Definitely, right? So obviously you're not going to get that many followers, anywhere close to that many followers, especially in pool, without some really, really cool content. So why don't we go through like the most basic level of it first? Is you have pool lessons. You actually
Yes.
give pool lessons, but you give them in a very unique way. You don't just like sit in front of a pool table and say, hey, do this and this and this. You actually interact while playing the game in a pretty unique way. And I think that's a lot of the reason you get a lot of the support that you do. So why don't you take us through not only the motivation that you had originally for doing it the way that you do, but I guess talk a little bit about why you do it that way as well.
Sure. So before I started my YouTube channel, I have some videos on there where I'm actually reviewing people's games. They send me a video of them and I give my review. I already do something like that for my APA League members because I do play in an APA League. So I had plenty of practice as far as how I'm going to interact with the camera, or at least how my voice is going to sound on camera as well as my instructions that I actually try to give to help somebody improve their game. So I already had that background as far as how to teach, but then as far as how to construct an actual video, I had to obviously do research. I looked at a lot of different pool channels. That's where I found Dr. Dave Billiard's pool channel, which is great, a bunch of other ones to see how they actually portray their information, because one, I don't want to copy them. But at the same time, like you said, I want to try to be unique if I can. And the biggest thing I saw that was unique was the way you described it, is how I interact with the camera. And I hardly do any edits. A lot of videos that are out there is where you see someone say whatever it is they're going to say, and then when they get to the demonstration part of it, there's an edit somewhere in there to where you can see it just jump from one context to the other, and mine are not like that. It's you hear me talk, and then you see me demonstrate exactly what I just said. And that has at least been the algorithm, I guess I should say, on how I actually try to construct most of my YouTube videos, because I found that I can't do everything in one take. Everybody should be aware that no YouTube videos are done in one take unless someone actually is a raw recorder, because that does exist. They just turn the camera on, record, and when they're done, they publish. And that's it. So everything's on the fly. With mine, I do try to be professional. So if I slur my words, or once I listen to the recording, if I cannot hear every single solitary word that I meant to say in that sentence, I'll go and do a retake, because I want to make sure that the message is actually crisp and clear on top of the demonstration, because I can have a clear, crisp message, but I could screw up on the demonstration. So I got to make sure that the two are actually in sync, and then therefore I have a clip that I can set aside and then work on the next clip, and there'll be some sort of editing to transition those two clips together that actually create the entire lesson.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, now we'll actually talk about the videos themselves, because we kind of have this background as to what you do to actually create them, but that's not to take away from the actual stuff that you talk about too, because we're about the same Fargo speed. We're about the same quality of player, and I got some stuff out of what you were doing, and you know, I play pretty close to the same speed as you, and there's some stuff that you're talking about that I'm like, oh yeah, that's a thing. And it helped my game a little bit. So talk about the actual videos that you have as far as content and how it can help all ranges of players.
Well, I think that goes back to what I said before about the words that I choose. I mean, as time has gone by, we've started to learn that words are actually very important. And you want to make sure that the words that you actually say have one meaning and one meaning only. You don't want them to actually have double meanings, because then that's where misinterpretation comes in. And you'll obviously get the question, do you mean to say this? And like, well, crap, I chose the wrong words. If you actually say that to me, I chose the wrong words. I think because I'm able to, or with practice, I've been able to break it down to such a level to where hopefully they don't ask me a question, then that's what allows them to learn, because that at least tells me there was a complete understanding in what I was trying to say on top of a complete understanding at what I was trying to demonstrate as well. Because obviously if the demonstration doesn't match up with the verbiage, then it just doesn't work. An example would be, I have a video where I demonstrate how to break an 8-ball rack, but it's using a magic rack. And a lot of comments that I've gotten on the video will say, well, what about this or what about that? And what they're referring to is when you don't use a magic rack, there's going to be gaps in the rack. And that's the biggest variable you cannot control when it comes to being able to predict the pattern that the balls will actually spread. Whereas in with a magic rack, all the balls are touching, which means those variables are completely eliminated. And the only variables that you're in control of are where you hit the cue ball, how hard you hit the cue ball, and where you strike the rack. And if you're able to repeat those three variables, then you're going to see a consistent result. And what I showed was, you know, where five different balls were going to go on a consistent break. And I demonstrated that very well. But even some people were like, well, you forgot about this. Well, you forgot about that. And every comment that they were referring to dealt with using a non-magic rack. Right. I was like, your comment does not relate to the context in which I'm trying to provide. Your comment is correct, but it you're comparing apples and oranges. If I broke with a non-magic rack and just tried to give myself a tight rack, I already know it's not going to be a tight rack, because it's almost impossible for a human being with a regular rack to give a perfectly frozen magic rack type rack to yourself or even to an opponent. So
unless
the variables are going to be different. That too,
yeah.
Exactly.
The rack is so set. Yeah.
But that's usually where I try to break things down. And usually when I give them that type of clarification, then they're like, the light bulb goes off. And so I start allowing people to have a more open mind as to what I'm explaining, because they'll ask me, well, it didn't work when I did this. And I'll ask them, well, did you do this? I think of the most common things that they might be forgetting, which would be use of equipment, or, you know, what's your felt like versus my felt, or, you know, really try to create an apples to apples comparison if you can.
Yep.
And then it starts to finally sink in.
Because, yep, of course, if you're going to be playing on a diamond, you're going to be playing on a valley or a Brunswick, the racks are going to break a little bit differently. But for the most part, if you can remove as many of the variables as you possibly can by using the magic rack, by, you know, trying to hit the same speed, and that's where like something like a break rack really helps with, because you can actually get down to the point where you're hitting about the same exact speed every single time, and then you only have to control
right.
the strike and where you're striking. That gets pretty tough unless you're, you know, Sky Woodward or Shane Van Boning, and they hit the ball
yeah,
so perfect every time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about the actual contents of the video itself. You have I've seen you have patterns, different pattern play. videos. You have how to use English, how to throw balls. You have a bunch of different types of videos. Talk about some of the ones that you've done, and which ones were your favorite to create.
Ooh, favorite to create. Well, I would have to say that all of them are my favorite to create. If I were to give a number one, I think it would have to be the one that isn't actually very popular on my channel. And that's I have a video where I introduce the Playing the Ghost series, where I actually do want to play up against the ghost and see how many times I can win versus how many times I can lose. But the very first video I made for that playlist was a parody video, because I actually bought a green suit. And I would play the ghost and purposely miss at points in time, run off camera, change into the green suit, come back on, and try to run the table. And if I'm successful, then that's a clip that I actually keep. But when I run that clip through my video software, I green screen myself out. So all you actually see is a visage of a player that's actually playing that runs the table. And that one right there was a boatload of fun to actually create. It just wasn't as popular as I thought it would have been, but it doesn't. To me, the popularity of the video doesn't matter, even though we would say that YouTube views do matter. But for me, I had so much fun making that video, and it's forever on the internet now. So if it ever gets its exposure and starts to become an actual trend, then that's something that I can actually do. Like, because of that video and what I did, something very similar, and I'm gonna go ahead and spoil it for everybody if someone beats me to the punch. Halloween, I planned on trying to get Stormtrooper. Stormtrooper costume, because they never miss, or they always miss. Yeah. So I want to be the Stormtrooper that doesn't miss and actually runs the table for that type of connection. If there's actually anybody that watches it that realizes what I'm trying to do, like, oh, he's dressed up as a Stormtrooper, they're always supposed to miss. Wait, this one's not missing. Like, that's the parody that's actually supposed to happen. Because I have gotten comments on that video where, like, someone actually did say, how come you're not chalking up as often? And the first thing I want to go is, like, do you realize this is a joke video? Like, it doesn't matter what I do in this video. This is not a serious video.
That's pretty fun stuff. The more serious videos that you do, as far as the – if somebody has never been exposed to your channel – and they are looking to get better at the game. Talk about the more serious videos that you have that could actually help to improve somebody's game.
Sure. So that's where my original playlist would come into play, because I do organize all my videos into playlists. I try to keep my YouTube channel very nice and organized, where it's easy to find stuff, and that's all the pool lessons. The only thing that I saw sometimes in a lot of videos that were out there is that a lot of lessons are actually compiled together. Meaning, like, you might see a video that talks about English in 1 minute and then talks about jump shots in the next minute, you know, kind of thing, where I think they're two totally separate subjects, to where one should kind of learn this before attempting to do this. And most of my videos, if you actually watch them in chronological order, that's what they're for. The very first video I did was fundamentals. How are you supposed to hold the cue? How are you supposed to stand? What the different bridge hands look like? And then after that, how to actually aim with using the ghost ball aiming method. And then after that, understanding the tangent line, how the cue ball actually comes off of the cue ball, or the from the object ball that you actually hit. It's very in chronological sequence, from the most basic thing that you're supposed to learn, and then the things that you should almost naturally learn as you naturally progress through the game, all the way up until, I think, my last pool lesson video had to deal with pre-shot routines. And how to try to keep a consistent pre-shot routine. And because if anybody's a pool player that's out there, they know that when they see an easy shot, their pre-shot routine just goes out the window, because it's just an easy shot. They just get down and shoot the ball. But if it's a super thin cut shot, or if it's a bank shot, or it's a kick shot, they're religiously going through their pre-shot routine. They're doing calculations, they're chalking, they're looking at all the different angles. But if it's an easy shot, they don't do that. And the pre-shot routine that I'm talking about basically says, it doesn't matter the difficulty of the shot, maintain the consistency. But I'm not perfect, even I don't maintain the consistency, but at least the lesson is out there for other people that want to learn. Because as you get better, some of those habits just happen to creep in, to where it's like, oh, whatever, I can make this with my eyes closed. And that's exactly how you're going to treat the shot.
Practice as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
but I do try to, in my videos, I do try to portray what I teach as well, because I don't want there to be a controversy. And like, well, you said this, but you're doing this. And actually, a lot of that stuff is actually starting to bleed into my game as well, which people are starting to notice that my game is even going higher. And I was like, well, I guess that also has nothing to do with the fact that I'm actually practicing while I'm making a YouTube video. Like, practicing is also making me better. It's not because of, you know, stuff like this, because you can have bad fundamentals and still be an awesome pool player. Like, I know people that have, you know, what I would consider to be very bad fundamentals, but they're better than me. So it's like they figured something out.
Francisco Bustamante.
Yeah, with the up and down. Exactly. Like, that's any.
But he
any
hits the ball so good.
Exactly. Any pool instructor would tell you, like, that's a no-no. You shouldn't do that because you don't know where you're actually going to strike the cue ball. And if you mean to put bottom left and you actually hit, you know, more towards the center because you're bowing your cue up and down. But a professional like Bustamante or even Efren Reyes, they spent years perfecting, you know, the bad habit, and they got it to work for them.
Yeah, that's what it is, right? There's different ways of getting good, right? You could do the 10,000 hours, or you can do the 100,000 hours with crap mechanics.
Yeah, and exactly.
Efren Reyes and Efren Reyes and Francisco Bustamante are some of the greatest pool players of the last 20 years, and they don't have the greatest mechanics, but they hit the ball so pure.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And that's why I love the people that try to argue, well, what about the pros? And I'm like, come on, please stop trying to make an apples to orange comparison. You're talking about people that have invested their life into the game versus people that are trying to learn the game. It's not a fair comparison.
Yeah, for sure. So basically, I guess going back to the question, you have plenty of videos for just about any player's ability. Whether it's somebody who's just basically got a table for the first time and they haven't picked up a pool cue before, or, you know, the touring professional where, you know, they have little bits here and there. I mean, they probably already know the things, but it's a reinforcement. You have things along the way, very in-depth, detailed, minute details, plus the very basic fundamental stuff.
Yeah, because I think what ends up happening, because I know it happened to me before I got to the level of where I'm at, is as you learn, even after you learn whatever it is you learn, next thing you know, instincts come into play. And a lot of people out there will say, well, I do this by feel. And I was like, that's fine that you do that by feel, but what you don't know behind that feel is mathematics, physics, and stuff. Like, and Dr. Dave is the greatest at explaining a lot of that stuff. The only thing with mine is that I try to explain that same exact stuff, but at a more rudimentary level, so that hopefully other people can pick it up. You know, so, I mean, like, to me, Dr. Dave is my inspiration as far as creating the content. I see what he's done, and I obviously don't want to mimic it, but when I look at the words that he chooses, I'm like, yeah, I get it, but who below me does not get it? And so what do I need to say differently from him that allows them to get it? As well, and not just to pick on Dr. Dave, because like I said, he's my favorite YouTube channel. Other YouTubers as well, and that's to say the same for me. Because again, if someone asks me a question as a comment, that already tells me that I didn't explain it good enough, and I need to try to figure out what do I need to say better to be able to appeal to them. Because again, if I'm appealing to them, then I already know I'm appealing to people that understood if I chose different or, you know, higher words or higher educated words or anything like that. Because I want to make sure I hit as much people as possible with the understanding that I'm not going to get 100%. I don't aim for that, but I do try to hit a vast majority of my audience. So that, like you said, from the beginner all the way to the immediate and even some of the advanced, if I've, you know, enlightened you on a couple of subjects and we've played pretty much the same speed, is because one, you probably just never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
And then hearing it for the first time, that's when the light bulb goes off and goes, oh, well, that makes sense. Now I have a better understanding. And that's the philosophy that I try to at least put into a lot of my lessons, that if you have a better understanding, then you can have more discoveries to go along with it. And it's not just a whole lot of guesswork.
Yes, for sure. And was it Jasper Gann? I hope I pronounced that right. You don't need to be a great player to be a great teacher, and you don't need to be a great teacher to be a great player. That's a pretty good that's a good line. I mean, Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer, for my money, in the entire world, and he still had a coach.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you look at a lot of professional coaches out there, some of them weren't professional players.
Johan.
You know, they just studied the game and understood the strategies and mechanics and then taught, you know, whoever their team members were. It's basically the same exact thing.
Yeah, Johan Rajusink. I think that's how you pronounce his last name, Rajusink. The U.S. Moscone Cup captain for the last couple of years. He doesn't play pool at all, but he's probably the best billiard instructor in the world at this point.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your YouTube channel a little bit more, and sure. I guess let's pull it up here for anybody who's never been there. So I'm going to be covering up our faces, and I'll get rid of all this stuff. Here is your channel. It is, because we haven't given the plug for it yet, we have Lil Chris, and I'll just use this to cover up my face, because we don't need to see my face anyways. Oh, that's the wrong one. All right, here we go. This is how the sausage is made, people. All right. So we have right here Lil Chris, and we have the playlists. We have, let's see, you even have, so this is actually why I wanted to come on here. You don't even have all pool videos. You have a C# programming lessons. You have...
Yeah.
You have some weightlifting stuff in here, some body, well, I shouldn't say bodybuilding stuff, but kind of, right? The 30-day push-up challenge, 30-day bicep workout challenge. There's some fun stuff on here.
Yeah, so, like, the common thing that's on YouTube is that usually a YouTube channel is dedicated to one specific thing. And so my YouTube channel is dedicated to one specific thing. That's me, you know, not one specific subject. So, like, the very first videos that I actually started to do were fitness videos, because I do like to work out. I like to stay physically fit. I've actually gone by the wayside over the last year or so, and especially over the last couple of months. We don't have to get into that subject.
Welcome to my
but
life.
Exactly. But I'm starting to get back into it. I've been going back to the gym regularly, and when I started, my best friend wanted to start with me. And so the things we started with were – you know, physical fitness challenges. The very first thing we tried to do to see was who can grow the biggest biceps in 30 days, you know, kind of thing. So we structured a specific workout routine that we were going to both do without swaying off, so that there's no cheating, and specific workout days where we work out in the gym and where we work out at home, et cetera, et cetera. We took before measurements and after measurements. Now, my friend is much bigger than me, so naturally he's already going to have a bigger bicep. So we were measuring the difference from the beginning measurement to the end measurement. And whoever had the biggest difference was the winner. We ended up in a tie, which I was happy about, because I clearly thought my friend would have blown me out of the water. But if you look at those videos, they're not popular at all. They have like less than 1,000 views. And it wasn't until I started making the pool instructional videos, which I already had in mind to do, that the channel finally started to take off. And it was really my banking video that really did it, because I already had in this mind that if I were to become successful, that I would do giveaways and stuff, and like what were my milestones. And the first giveaway was at 100 subscribers, and then 1,000, and then 10,000, and then 25,000, and then 50,000. But when I got my 100 subscriber, from 100 to 1,000, in between there was when I released my bank video. And I had already was planning on doing my first giveaway for 100 subscribers. But I was playing in a BCA state tournament. And while I was in that BCA state tournament, my phone was just blowing up. Like, I just kept getting all these email notifications. This person subscribed, this person subscribed, this person subscribed. And I start looking at my subscriber count, and I go from 100 to 300. And I check it an hour later to 500. I check it a couple hours later. I'm like, holy crap, I'm going to get to 1,000 before I even get to do the 100 subscriber giveaway. And I was just completely blown away by that. And that's where everything really started to take off. And clearly I want to appeal to my audience. I know my audience wants to see more pool videos, so those do take priorities. But every now and again, I just mingle in something else, like my programming videos. And the programming is because I used to be a adjunct faculty member. After I graduated with my master's degree, the college at which I graduated from offered me a job to teach programming. And I took it and taught 3 classes for 3 semesters. It was two C# courses and 1 C++ course. So having the background as an instructor also comes from my philosophy of being able to hit the lowest common denominator. Because when I'm actually lecturing in front of students, I can actually physically see my students and see their body reactions, and you know, hear their voices to know whether or not if they're actually getting anything. And if I see someone not getting something, I do start to think, well, how do I restructure my lesson to get that person? Because if I get that person, that means I've got everybody in the classroom, because I don't really want anybody to get left behind. Sometimes I'm successful, sometimes I'm not. I mean, that's just the way it is. But that philosophy is what goes into my YouTube videos.
Yeah, and that definitely shows up in the videos. Raleigh Williams is watching. Hi, Raleigh. Maybe he's left already. But
the average pool player. I love his channel.
Yeah, Raleigh's the best. He's the absolute best. So I guess we could chat a little bit more about some of the other stuff that you have on the playlist, because I guess we have Break and Runs in here. We have Playing the Ghost. And anybody out there that's watching, first off, go over and subscribe to him for sure. This is the pool coaching lessons. You can't see right now because you can't see my screen, but everybody else can. And it shows all these different channels and – or I should play this. Playlists, I should say. But you also have that T-shirt on, and you won that from your spot shot challenge.
Yep.
So these videos right here. You actually won that for doing a spot shot challenge. So you like to partake in a lot of the different fast and loose designs challenges that are out there, and you can win some prizes on it. That's pretty cool. And then you upload them all to your Facebook page.
Well, the thing about that was a buddy made me aware of the fast and loose design challenge. The spot shot challenge itself, I had a video or two prior to the actual thing, because I've already actually done it before. There was already a viral video when it was mentioned that Sky Woodward had done, I think it was 24 or 26 spot shots in a row on a 9-foot table.
<That's> so good.
And then Dr. Dave made an instructional video on doing the spot shot challenge, and that's when I responded. Dr. Dave did a video where he did 6, and I'm like, okay, I think I can beat 6. And I go and try it. I'm like, crap, this is harder than I thought. But I eventually do beat it, and then I thought I was going to turn it into an actual series to where, like, you know, I would do this every so often and try to get higher numbers. But when I saw that it just wasn't very popular, then it's like, okay, again, I do want to appeal to my audience. So I kind of left it by the wayside. And then a buddy messages me, hey, check this out, because he knows I've done a video and he's done a video on it as well. And we're like, okay, now I have a reason to try it again. And so I at least did, I think, 2 more submissions of the spot shot challenge. One that I submitted twice to the fast and loose design challenge, and it was good enough to get me 3rd place, at least for an 8-foot table. I unfortunately would have to disagree with the idea that 7-footers and 8-footers were categorized together while the 9-footer was off on its own. But, you know, it's not my challenge. I don't make the rules. I was just happy to be able to participate, because the one person that won 1st and 2nd place, the same person, won 1st and 2nd place with a submission of 27 balls, I think it was, on a 7-foot table, and then 18 for 2nd place. 18 was their original submission, and then they beat themselves with a 27, which was ridiculous. Even for a 7-foot table, that's just ridiculous.
I tried it as well. I got to 2 once, and then I'm just like, this is stupid. I'm done with this. And I rage quit. I just totally rage quit. I'm not even ashamed to say it. I totally rage quit. It's spot shots are so hard. I hate them. I hate them so much. But so we can move on from there, and let's move on to, obviously, you have 54,000, almost 55,000 subscribers. You've already said maybe 4, 5, 6 times that you want to adhere to your base. You want to make videos that they want to consume, right? So
yes.
Without giving away any, or maybe you can, who knows, it's up to you. What are you looking for into the future to create as far as new content to continue building your listener base and basically get the new content out there?
Well, I always have in the back of my mind something that I want to try to do and turn into a video. But with the idea of making sure, like, how can I explain this? Like, for example, there isn't a lesson on mass A shots in my YouTube right now. I have one in mind. It's just that is one of the most complex types of shots that you can actually demonstrate and teach, because it's not like I just want to make a video that says, get up to the cue ball, put your cue straight up and down, and just hit it, and like, and the lesson's over. There's got to be some sort of methodical approach to understanding that elevation, how much English, how hard, and what can you actually use as a starting point, because there's no there's no actual system to a mass A shot, but there's got to be some way that you can teach it to where it's understandable to hopefully that someone can actually do. And of course, without ruining the table. That was one of the biggest messages that I said on my jump shot video, that if you watch the way I do a jump shot, I don't touch the table. But when I was learning, I obviously did touch the table. It wasn't until I got better and better at it to where I can actually strike a jump shot without worrying about damaging the felt. The only damage the felt get is the fact that the cue ball skids off of the felt, which is no different how when you break. That's why there's burn marks where cue balls are most commonly broke from, is because the felt is getting worn down on. So the felt is maintaining its normal damage that it gets from the cue ball from striking it from a jump shot, at least from me. Because then I watch other players that are trying to learn how to do a jump shot, and they do strike all the way through the cue ball, and the tip of their cue hits the felt and then bounces off the felt to the table and usually leaves like probably a rip mark of some sort. But I mean, unfortunately, that's how you're supposed to learn. I understand that businesses want to maintain their equipment and, you know, get it to last as long as they want. I mean, but if your business is in support of a league and the league actually supports all the legal rules, then you should allow your customer base to, you know, learn. I mean, if you're worried about how much it costs, you know, obviously just put up a sign that says, hey, you damage it, you help pay for it, you know, kind of thing. I don't know, but don't take away the legal aspects of the game because you want to protect your product. And I understand that you want to protect your product, but you know, if players are going to go out of your bar or establishment and go playing a tournament, they're representing your place, which is free advertisement. So allow them to learn.
Yeah, it's definitely a fine line between wanting your players to have all of the weapons in the tool shed, or all the tools in the tool shed, so to speak, while also maintaining your equipment, because it does. And I actually jump differently than you. I actually teach the follow through, but I teach the acceleration through the strike and then the just follow through of a normal shot that doesn't have to be accelerating all the way to the table. So you you accelerate through the shot and then you decelerate off of it, but I still follow through in the same way I would a normal shot. So if you're striking through the cue ball, you don't stop once you're through the cue ball. You still do the deceleration into a normal stroke follow through. But
right.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways of, I mean, you can look across the pool world and see that every single player teaches and shoots different ways. And it, like you said earlier, some of the things resound with your listener base and then some things don't. So you have to say it a different way, or maybe you have to teach a different way. And that's what it takes to be a really good teacher in the game.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head with what you just said there, because what I try to teach, I definitely try to portray the idea that I'm not saying that this is the way that you're supposed to do something. This is what works for me, and I'm trying to explain it in a way that hopefully that you can understand and see if it works for you. Yeah. If it doesn't work for you, then hopefully there is another instructor out there or another type of material or resource that you can use that can allow you to be able to understand it and obviously comprehend. That's where I've been trying to fill in the gaps when I go and look and see what other types of YouTube channels that are out there and the way people are teaching. And then, of course, I do look through the comments to see if there's any questions, because if there's questions, it means the same thing, that whoever they were watching didn't explain something well enough, because that's why there's a question. And so I try to learn from all of that, and I've taken all that in to what I was able to produce.
Yeah. So bringing it full circle, you had said that you are hoping to do a Mass A video. Kyle Boutte said that Bob Jewett, J-E-W-I-T-T, mm-hmm. He said that he has a great system for Mass A shots. Don't know who he is.
Bob Jewett, I think, is a colleague of Dr. Dave. I think they both are part of the Billiard University. The only thing I have on Mass A shots, other than experience, is an old Robert Burns video. Do you remember Robert Burns?
I have all of his books.
Yeah, from way back in the day. He has a system that I pretty much still use today, which, again, just gives you, like, an idea. Because when people say there's a system, that means if you do the system, it's going to work. Like, no, that's not how pool works. There's so much physics that change the variable of a system that always doesn't produce the outcome. But at least what the system does is gives you a starting point. And then from the starting point, that's where the experience and practice starts to come, and then you start to evolve as an actual player.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way of putting it. There's a lot of things that you just have to have the feel for. Going back to jump shots are an absolute feel shot. You can't tell somebody to strike a cue ball at 7 miles an hour and that's just going to work. I mean, the pool doesn't work that way, right? So you have to you have to sit there and you have to teach them the fundamentals of how to hold the cue and how to accelerate quickly through the cue ball so that you can generate that force to get up over a ball. But until they actually have the cue in their hands and they're learning how to do that themselves, you can kind of teach them how to get started. But ultimately, it's going to come down to you just got to practice. You got to get that muscle memory. You got to know how to strike the cue ball to be able to do that. And that's like I think that's what you're kind of getting at there with the masse shots.
Pretty much, you can read the recipe of a cookbook, but until you actually get in the kitchen and try cooking it, you don't have no clue what you're doing.
There's definitely different levels to the game as far as like a pre-shot routine, right? You can watch somebody do that, and you can walk up to the table and do it immediately. There's no practice to a pre-shot routine. You have to practice to make it second nature, so that you don't have to think about it while you're doing it. The one thing that I'm teaching now, big time for the people that I work with, is to have a pause before your last stroke. Some players have it in the back of their strokes. I don't like it in the back of the strokes. If you like it, that's fine. I teach it for the students who like to have it, but I like my pause right before the last stroke.
That's the same way I do mine in my pre-shot routine. I said on your final stroke, you pause at the cue ball, pull back, and then fire. And
yes.
My idea behind that is because, again, professionals will say pause in the back. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I just don't agree with it because, to me, it interrupts the momentum that you actually have in striking the ball. So when you actually pull back and go forward, it's almost going to be at the same speed. Sometimes the forward stroke is actually going to be faster than the backstroke because you're going to put power behind it. But if you put a pause in there, then you're interrupting that natural momentum that your arm is going to have when you actually do a final stroke. And that's the only reason why my pause is at the beginning, so that way I can just do one continuous movement for a final stroke and actually hit the ball.
That's correct. And Raleigh Williams says, ask Gaspard Gustave de Coriolis.
I don't know what that means.
Raleigh, you need to be more. You gotta talk English to us here, man.
I'm going to assume that's probably still about the Massey, maybe. I'd have to research that person's name.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. I got an idea though. I have an idea. Raleigh, well, I'm going to invite you if you want to come talk to us. Do you know Raleigh?
Fantastic.
Do you know Raleigh?
Well, I know him from his YouTube channel. I don't know him personally.
Yeah, I don't know what you're up to, Raleigh. If you're not busy, you want to join in and chat with us, and then you can tell us what you're talking about. If I can... Okay, I need to. He's the guy who derived the equation for the Massé. There's an equation for the Massé.
Oh wow! I was right that it had to deal with the Massé. So clearly, yeah. I mean, because anything you do on a pool table is physics, and physics are driven by mathematical formulas. So I can see that to be true, that there is some sort of mathematical formula behind the Massé shot. But
yeah.
Again, repeating the formula, the variables of the formula, that's the hard part. Always hitting at the correct elevation, at the correct spot, at the correct speed to produce the same result. Like that's the thousands of hours of practice that you have just to be able to produce a consistent result.
Yeah, and it goes back to the break shot that we were talking about before. The Magic Rack fixes a lot of the variables that are out there, but you still have to strike with the same speed and the same direction and on the same spot on the cue ball. It's the same way for a Massé, right? It's the elevation of the cue, the striking speed, the point for which you hit the cue ball. The cloth, I think, has a lot more of an effect there, too, as opposed to on the break shot. I think the cloth really comes into effect there.
Sure.
Yeah. But, so we can move on from that. I don't know what you're doing, Raleigh, or if you're interested in joining with us, but you can if you'd like. But I do want to ask you, because... Well, the Massé video, you said that you're hoping to do that in the near future, and that would kind of complete off your playlist for the instruction videos. Maybe you can, maybe there's a couple more you'll think of down the road. But that, for the most part, that completes that playlist?
No, there are quite a few more, but it's still a matter of things, details that have to be taught. Like my fundamentals video, like almost every one of my videos, I can do a recap on and go more in depth. Because every video that I have in my pool lesson is a brisk, here's the summary at the top of how to do certain things. And if you go through every one of those videos, there are questions in every single solitary one of those videos. So again, that's why I said, like, I must have explained something not good enough to where, like, I just have a video and there are no questions, you know, which is next to impossible, but I tried to have the limited amount of questions as possible. So, for example, in my fundamentals video, I don't go over bridging over a ball. You know, just something as simple as that. In my Banks video, I mentioned at the end how speed and English change the outbound angle of an object ball. But I have no demonstrations of that. So I need to, you know, that video is a year old too. And I haven't even made the follow-up video where I said I'm going to make a follow-up video. But I did mention it in my latest pool coaching lesson video because the player that I was reviewing did a bank shot and they missed short on it. And I did explain that all you had to do was either hit the ball harder or throw inside spin on it to make the rebound angle shorter. And you probably would have made the shot because of how far you actually missed it on. So like that video has to come out first, in my opinion, before I even attempt to teach two rail kick shots or three rail kick shots, because you have to understand the variables that go along with that before you can even understand, other than here's a diamond system, here's the rail, hit the ball and see what happens.
Whoa.
Hello.
I've got this guy's more popular than I am. I'm honored. How's it going, Raleigh?
Wow, that is inaccurate, Chris. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. So it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
You know, I've never been watching a TV show and then gotten on the TV show. This is great.
Well, this is what happens when you become a legend, man. You're like all of our hero.
Wow.
You are the average pool player.
Thank you so much. You know, it occurs to me that maybe that moniker, I shouldn't have like leaned so hard into that, because now that's like,
it's great. I mean, I don't mean any insult by it at all, because your content is just freaking fantastic. I love the videos that you do it and stuff. It's just awesome.
Thanks. I couldn't feel more similarly, man. Your stuff is genuinely instructional and like helpful, and I think that's like really, really great, and you're doing a great thing for the pool world. Also, Nate, you're here too. What's up, dude?
I'm just over here. I'm like threatened by your guys' beards right now. I feel like I'm really like failing on my Rona beard, and it's
oh, this is far from Rona.
It's so full, and it's I'm so threatened.
I think Chris and I are doing this thing I like to call the mustache. Just kidding. you do the mustache, but then you let the beard. You're like, I'm not really a mustache guy. Don't worry, like I'm a normal dude. I don't have like a full ass 1910s handlebar mustache. I got a beard, but the mustache is definitely the Batman of this. The facial.
It's funny that you say that, because you can't really tell on camera, but my mustache / goatee is more predominant than my actual beard.
Oh, you got the goatee? Just kidding.
Pretty much.
Oh, that's cool. That's next level.
I have a beard hair. Just kidding. I got that one. That's maybe someday. Maybe someday. So I think this could be fun. Which of you two? So Raleigh, you were creating a little bit of YouTube content before Chris, right? Because Chris, you're about just under 2 years old. Or just over 2 years.
December 2019 was when I released my first video, and that was just an introduction video. There was no content behind it.
That's December 2019 is like 6 months ago.
I'm sorry, 2018.
Get your story straight, buddy. Now we can't believe anything you say.
Oh, you got me.
Hashtag fake news.
I say 2019 because that's when my YouTube channel started, was the year of 2019. The very first you're right. The very first video was released on in December of 2018. I actually think it was December 31st. It was like just before the turn of the new year.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I think the Kamui channel's been around for 2 years. I did the first like your average pool player video. I think like I had a weird accidental 2 year anniversary the day Nathan and I recorded a podcast.
Yeah, it was. I think it was one day. I think it was one day prior. I think it was the 2 year anniversary of it.
And I didn't even think about that. You pointed out how special that was, and I think that's a memory we'll always share together, Nate. And I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, and that was all the research that I did beforehand. I timed that out perfectly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, infinite more research than me, I guess. I was like, I know my life. I don't need to research that. Turns out I did. And then I think I started, I can't remember exactly, I think the first video that I released on, like, just like a Raleigh Williams YouTube channel was the Jennifer Beretta video, the, like, full lesson with Jennifer Beretta. And I could be wrong. I think it's something like April 2019 was that video. Might have been March.
So Chris, when you were starting up your YouTube channel, how much of Raleigh's channel did you take from, as far as inspiration or
and this is
ideas?
This will be I will be able to litigate based on your answer, so be very careful here, Chris.
Okay, so my whole take from Raleigh's channel, and in comparison to what I wanted to do with my channel, was to not have celebrities. That's really the only difference, because we know that the celebrities of pool is what makes pool great. However, there are more of us average pool players than there are the celebrity pool players, and that's really where most of my inspiration is driven from. So when you look at the interviews that I've done, they're just regular pool players, and that's basically what I wanted to be able to say. And that was coming off of, you know, seeing stuff that Raleigh had done with the professionals out there.
That's very interesting. I think what Chris has that he can bring to the table is talent. And so since I didn't have that talent, I had to bring celebrities to the table. So yeah, I mean, that was my motivation. I was like, can I play pool well? No, so I need.
I would disagree and say that you can play pool well.
I think you're getting there, man. You're getting there. That stroke, man. You're stroke. I've seen some stroke shots out of you that those aren't terrible player strokes. You gotta have one to have those shots.
If you were able to replicate that Corey Dual draw shot, that is an awesome stroke.
Yeah, that was wild.
Well. I mean, as a lot of the commenters have pointed out, it wasn't as good as the Corey Dual draw shot. But thank you. I mean, I really appreciate that. And I definitely have been, like, trying really hard. I think that's, like, maybe that's the thing that my channel does well. It's just, like, a lot of effort is put in. And that the output is questionable. But effort is definitely there.
So well, on the topic, though, I actually have a question, because has current events deferred your U.S. Open? I know you had a whole series of training to the U.S. Open.
And I was going to say that, too. Before you answer that, I mean, I want to know how you feel knowing that you lost your U.S. Open title, because you were going to win that. It just got ripped from you.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty torn up about it until I realized that technically I won every game that I played at the U.S. Open.
There you go.
Undefeated.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, on paper, you know, I'm one of the winningest U.S. Open participants. So, you know, that's really what made me feel better about that. The reason I came on and thought, you know, like, why don't I make this all about me? This awesome show that I was watching, you know, was because the same dude who like pioneered the Coriolis effect, Gaspar de Coriolis, also was a big pool fan and mapped out the Massey equation for, like, where on the ball to hit it and the speed and the angle that will cause, like, a curve in the ball. Same dude.
I'm definitely going to have to research that, because maybe I can use that as a reference. Because the only thing I knew in my mind to use as a reference is, what do you do? What happens when you step on a soccer ball? It goes forward and then immediately comes back. Like, to me, that's relatable. Everybody understands. Or if you step on a basketball or anything, because that is essentially the Massey effect. You have force coming straight down on a ball. The force propels the ball forward, but because the ball is spinning backwards, it comes back. That is essentially what a Massey shot is, just depending upon where you actually step on the ball, except now we're hitting a cue ball with a stick instead of using your foot. That was the relatable reference that I was going to end up trying to portray when I eventually try to construct that lesson.
Yeah, that's like the only thing that I can think of that is like that I've seen is when somebody takes a hula hoop and like whips it forward and it like goes forward, but they've got the spin, you know, and it kind of spins back. That's sort of like the Florian Massey, where they just like whip it all the way.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of a good, like, it's such a irregular movement.
Yeah, and that's why I haven't taught it for so long, because it's so complex that I want to make sure that, one, I sound like I know what I'm talking about, and then I, of course, can demonstrate what I'm saying, and that hopefully the vast majority of the people that watch it can actually pick it up and understand it, and then go destroy somebody else's table.
Yeah.
Go down to your local league. Your local league for that, for sure.
Right.
Well, you guys were having a very, what I would call, a scintillating conversation, and then I came in here and I blew the whole thing. So maybe I should drop out.
You added to it, man. It was an honor to actually have a one-on-one conversation, because my only interaction, even for you, I guess, would be through each other's YouTube channels. So to be able to talk to you via in person online, it was an honor.
We exist outside of YouTube.
We're like pen
pals. Yeah.
Cool. All right, I'll hop off, and I'm gonna watch it on Facebook. So I hope everybody.
It's always a pleasure, Raleigh.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure. And the pleasure is all mine.
I thought I was gonna get eaten right there. I honestly thought I was gonna get eaten.
That just made my day right there. Just to have that interaction, that totally just made my day.
Well, let me. I'll jump in real quick before Raleigh has a chance to get back on Facebook. It's always scary to meet your heroes, right? Because, well, are they really as cool as they are on TV or on, you know, YouTube or on matches? Or it's always interesting meeting your heroes, because, you know, what if they're not as cool as they actually are on TV or
right?
in the movies?
What happens on camera is not what happens in real life.
Raleigh is one of the people that he is even more genuine. Which is hard to think, because he's so charming in his videos to begin with, but he is even better off the table. He is actually a really, really nice, smart, funny guy in real life too. It's he's one of the few that they actually get better away from their content, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome.
And I hope people get to see that, because this isn't edited, so this is just
exactly.
Raw Raleigh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why also I liked the fact that I started posting my APA matches that I had before we actually had the shutdown, because it's to show people, this is how I really play, versus this is a lesson, and it's a YouTube lesson where there's editing involved, to where like I want to be able to demonstrate to you what I'm doing. And do I do it on the first attempt? Of course not. I have no shame in admitting that. But the lesson is still there, because it's just up to me and my skill level to be able to demonstrate what I'm doing. But when you watch me in an APA match, there's no lesson. That's just raw. And whatever happens is whatever happens.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the last question that I was going to have for you, unless there's anything else you'd like to chat about. So the future content, we had talked a little bit about the Massey videos and then expanding upon the already existing videos, maybe going a little bit more in depth. But are there any other projects that you have maybe on the horizon that you've always wanted to start, or, you know, maybe in the last 30 minutes of chatting here, you thought maybe this would be a really cool thing to look into doing as well?
Sure. So as far as like everything that's just jumbling around in my head, and then taking the time to obviously try to produce the video, because none of my stuff is scripted, by the way. When I say like I want to do, or any of my videos that you watched, they're all done on the fly, meaning that that's why there's a crap ton of takes in between them because I might not like what I said in the first take, so I'll just say it again and choose different words and whatnot until finally it's all done. It's not like I'm sitting in my office here saying, like, I'm going to say this and I'm going to say that and then this is what's going to happen. And this, I don't do any of that. It's all done on the fly. So other videos that I know that I have in mind, because like you said, the pool stuff can only go so far, so how do I keep it entertaining? Well, there are other types of pool games that are out there that aren't really covered. I actually found that there's a golfing type game, and I don't mean the golf game that you play on a snooker table. We're all familiar with that. There's actually a golf-like style game where you can play 18 holes of golf, and the idea is that you have a rack, and in that rack is a pattern of balls, and you have X amount of strokes to be able to finish that for the par. Basically, you play 18 different pattern racks, and but when I say racks, I don't mean all 15 balls are in the rack. There might be a pattern of three balls, and I don't mean just the three ball pattern rack. It could be, you know, one ball in each corner is a particular hole, and you have X amount of strokes to be able to get a par. I want to make a video about that. There's bulliards. I'm sure you've heard of bulliards before, where you take a 10 ball rack and you do it like a bowling score. But not a lot of people are familiar with that. As far as the other actual games that are out there, like One Pocket, I mean, I'm not a very good One Pocket player, but I understand the rules. So obviously showing something like that would be in play. The closest three cushion table that I have is about an hour away from where I live. So if I ever get a chance to go over there and, you know, grab the table for at least an hour and no one bothers me with, you know, the cameras and stuff going, because if I'm out in public and people see the cameras, they're obviously gonna be like, what's going on over here? And could possibly interfere. But to try to show three cushion billiards, I think would be fun. And of course there's three cushion billiard matches that are out there, but those are done by professionals, not by average pool players. So yeah, I have tons and tons of ideas. It's just, you know, formulating them and of course having the time, because I do work as a software developer. So most of my YouTube making time is only during the weekend. And that's when I actually have the time, if I'm not participating in a tournament or just not hanging out with friends, because my YouTube channel is my hobby. And I strictly try to keep it that way and not try to get consumed with the popularity that I've at least achieved with, where it's like, oh, now I'm just going to do more, because like, yeah. No, it's like, you know, I tried to do I had the goal in mind of doing one video a week until I realized, like, this takes a lot of work to actually do it with the standards that I want to do it in. And now I've kind of reduced it to where, like, maybe I might do one every other week or maybe once a month, you know, as long as I'm regularly putting content out there for hopefully that not only people can learn from, but obviously enjoy. I don't want to be like some sort of monetistic type of person that it's like, oh, your video is, you know, insightful, but it's just so boring to watch. Well, like, oh, I want to try to be able to do both. And, you know, again, this is coming from comments and, you know, individuals like yourself. They're saying that I do a good job at that. So I just try to extenuate that as time goes by.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess that's pretty much all the questions I had. Was there anything else that you'd like to chat about?
Not that I had in mind, other than, you know, you have your own exposure with the podcast itself. Is there, your apparel line is in conjunction with Fast and Loose Designs. Does the Cue It Up podcast ever have any challenges as well, or is it just all done by Fast and Loose Designs?
Yeah, so mostly, so Chris Santana and I work together really closely on a lot of different things. We are pretty much tied to each other in a sense of there's some things that I'm good at that he relies on, and there's things that he's good at that I rely upon, to the point where, you know, it gets to the point where, like, if I need something done that he's good at, I just reach out to him and he does it. And if there's anything that he needs help with, he reaches out to me and I do it. And I help him out. And the challenges are his thing, and I help it in any sort of way that I can. So that is, I basically just let him do that one. I guess, and it's fun to be a part of. It's fun to, you know, give a couple prizes for it and use a platform to help him get it out there to some more people. But that's definitely a Fast and Loose thing, and I love supporting it, and I think it's really cool to see a lot of different people trying to win these little prizes that, you know, they're not, it's $100, but it's practice too. I mean, you get some pretty cool practice sessions and two out of it. So
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, I do. I got some apparel. I do a lot of. Well, I've done a couple events. So like the Q It Up Cup, for example. If you caught that, I don't know if you did or not.
I think I saw something about the Q It Up Cup event. That is well, you know, if current events don't delay it. Because I thought I saw something on Facebook that there's something coming up.
No, so we did it about a month ago, maybe now.
Okay.
And we were thinking about doing more of them, but if things start opening up more, there's going to be a lot less interest in, you know, people are just going to go out and play. So they're already be able to, you know, get their pool fix in without having to watch content. So we put it out there basically as a way to, I guess, give some people that pool scratch, I guess. People want to have pool content. They want to be playing, but if they can't play, they want to consume it in some sort of way. So this was a neat idea that we could all do it socially distanced, you know, in our own homes, in our own houses, in our own countries. And I guess, yeah, we were playing from, obviously Team USA was from the U.S. at the time, but we had players from the Netherlands, Italy, the U.K., Romania, Germany, and Spain. So I mean, we had from all over the place, which was fun. That was a neat one. So that was a good way of getting some content out there as well. But other than that, I mean, the podcast is the podcast. I'm thinking about doing a little bit more of these live interviews, if people like them. I don't know whether people like these more. Or they like the audio form more. So people out there, reach out.
This format right here was something that I was eventually going to have to branch off into for my pool talk episodes, where I interview the local players around here. But I know eventually some people want to actually like appear on the channel, which I'm more than willing to support. And it would obviously have to be done in some fashion like this, through a Zoom meeting or some type of, you know, webcam type of meeting. But if it's any of my local players within at least an hour to 2 hour drive, to where I can go and set up my cameras and stuff, that would be done the same way. But this was going to be like the next step to be able to do more interviews, especially because of current events.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, a lot like what you said, it's doing what the people want you to do, right? There's a certain amount of content that they like and that they don't like, and they want more of the stuff they like, and they don't care about the stuff that they don't like. So a lot of it comes down to is, what do the people want to consume as far as pool content? And I would like to think I'm flexible enough that I would be able to do a lot of those things.
Yeah, because like when I post any of my programming videos, I lose a pretty good handful of subscribers. But I mean, people watch it, people still comment on it. So I have an audience that appeals to those videos as well. Just I have more pool players than I have computer programmers.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I guess, is there anything else that you wanted to bring up or talk about?
Not that I can think of. This has been a lot of fun. I mean, when I did my first pool talk episode on myself to interview myself, I knew what I was going to ask myself, and I knew how I was going to answer, kind of thing. So to have an unstaged interview for me was just it was a pleasure to be on the podcast.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I'm glad you said yes to it. I know I actually did never really seen your YouTube channel until actually you tagged the podcast page. I'm not a big YouTube person, so I don't spend a lot of time on social media anyways. I have to now for Facebook, but I just can't stay in social media or, you know, YouTube or anything like that. I don't like spending a lot of time on it. So I'd actually never heard of you until you tagged me in the video you did. And at that point in time, I went on a little bit of a rabbit hole and watched a lot of your videos, and it's cool content. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny the way you mentioned that about never hearing of me, because when you requested me on Facebook, my instant response was, "Who the heck is this?"
Yeah,
right. And I go and look, and I'm like, "Oh, we have mutual friends, so maybe it's just another pool player." And then now we have, you know, this podcast episode. So
yeah, it's fun. Oh, and here you go. Oh wait, I gotta go to this one. This is my camera now. You probably can't read that.
My beard is magnificent. I appreciate it.
So that, you know,
that's awesome.
A compliment like that is just the best. All right. Well, I guess at this point, everybody out there that's been tuning in and watching, thank you so much. I hope that you've enjoyed this. And Lil Chris, I should say, go over and subscribe to him on Facebook. He has lots of great content that can really help out your game. And, you know, if he's anything like me, I take my ego and my happiness is based off of the amount of subscribers I have. So maybe he's like me, maybe he's not. I need more subscribers too, or my sadness level.
Hey everyone,
is go off
thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you
and
want to
sure
contribute to the
YouTube
future
channel,
content that will
Facebook,
be made, consider joining the podcast's
is
Patreon
personal, so
at
www.patreon.com/queueitup.
Yes,
becoming
can,
a Patreon
can
of the
one.
Podcast will help
right,
to
well,
create all of the future
again,
content
Chris,
that the podcast will have.
Pleasure.
Special shout out to
thank
Dave
you for
Peters,
having me on.
Aaron Taylor,
I really
Pete Silsby,
this.
Morgan
yep.
Lupton,
so,
Ben Young, Robert Miller,
yep.
Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.